Morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning. My name is Mark Griggs. I'm one of the account managers here at Canada Life and your host for this morning's webinar. I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague, Kim Jarvis, who many of you will know is one of our technical managers here and a member of our award-winning ICANN technical support team. So this morning's webinar, we'll look at how gift and loan trusts work, looking at some of the underlying investment advantages, potential opportunities that can provide, and some of the common pitfalls. Now, before we get started, just a few housekeeping items to cover off. So for those of you listening live this morning, CPD certificates will be emailed to you within the next 24 to 48 hours. Unfortunately, we can't offer CPD to those who are listening to the recording of the webinar or via the podcast service. Talking of recordings, we will obviously upload the recording of today's webinar to the archive section of our website. Again, that's normally done within the next 24 to 48 hours. You'll see a chat box facility on your screens. Please do use this to raise any questions as we go along, and we'll try and pick up as many of these as possible at the end of the webinar if we have time. You'll also see there's a section on the screen there for you to download copies of the slides plus some relevant handouts and sales aids. So without further ado, I'll hand you over to Kim, who will talk you through this morning's agenda.
Okay, thanks Mark, and thanks for joining me today, everyone. Right, as Mark said, we're just going to look through the gift and loan, how it can sort of help your clients. This, I've got a slide with the learning objectives, but Mark sort of went over those. So we'll just crack on. The first thing I want to really look at is, so you're sitting down with your client. Your client needs to decide whether they want access or whether they want IHT efficiency. Now, if they want total access, then you're not looking at a trust. If they want total IHT efficiency, yes, you're looking at a trust which they can't actually get any money from. But today what we want to look at is we want to look at the gift and loan, which actually sits sort of quite nicely in between both of those. And effectively the reason why it sits in there is that IHT efficiency, it's capped. The IHT is capped on the amount that the client is investing into the bond, the amount that they're loaning. Now they can have access to it because they do retain control and they can actually access that loan that they've given to the trustees. But again, you've got IHT efficiency there because you've got to remember that the growth that that loan is actually making when it's inside the bond accrues outside the investor's estate from day one. So it is got a little bit of IHT efficiency there. One thing that you've got to consider is that, yes, the growth always passes to the beneficiaries because, like I said, the settlor cannot get any more money back than the loan that they've given to the trustees. But you've got to remember that the trustees may have some exit and periodic charges to pay with discretionary trusts. And later on in the webinar, I've got a few slides on that. But if they have to pay that, that has to come out of the beneficiaries fund. It doesn't come out of the loan. Now, it is quite secure for the investor. They do have the right to get their loan repayments back. You've got to remember that they've got the 5% withdrawal tax deferred, so they can actually take out loan repayments and actually utilise that 5% tax deferred, and it won't be a chargeable event. So there is some security there for the investor. So that's sort of the objectives of why a client would maybe look at a gift and loan trust. So what is the process? If your client says, yes, they want to actually take out a gift and loan trust, effectively what they're doing is the client makes an initial gift, and with our trust, that gift is for £10. Now, that £10 is normally covered by the annual exemption, but if it's not, maybe they've used it previously, it's either chargeable lifetime transfer for a discretionary trust or potentially exempt transfer for a bare trust. That trust, the client will name beneficiaries and they'll name additional trustees. Now, when you're loaning money, you cannot loan money to yourself. So if you've got one settlor, you have to have another additional trustee. But remember, if you've got two settlors, again, you have to have a third trustee because you can't lend money to yourself. Then the client will complete a loan agreement. Now, that loan agreement is the amount of money that they are going to loan to the trustees. Now, again, if you're dealing with a joint settlor, we say that it's better to actually separate the loans and have one loan agreement each. So if you've got a client that's taking out a joint loan for 200,000, they'd each complete a loan agreement for 100,000. Within that loan agreement, they can also include what loan repayments that they want. Now, with that loan, now remember, it's just the loan, it's not the gift. The gift is only there to establish the trust, to actually establish when that trust starts, and then you can use that for the 10-year periodic charges and the exit charge points. So the £10, the trustees will actually just take and give out to the beneficiaries. It's only the loan money that they invest in the investment bond. So they come, they take that, they invest in the investment bond, and then the trustees can make withdrawals from that investment bond to actually meet the loan repayments. So that's the actual process. So just before I go on to a case study, there's just one other couple of points that I just want to touch on. And they're the gift with a reservation of benefits and the pre-owned asset tax. Now, you probably all know gift with a reservation of benefits. Section 102 of the Finance Act 86 says that it's applied to gifts where the settlor retains the right to benefit from that. Now, as I've been saying, the settlor is loaning money to the trustees. He's not making a gift. So actually, it doesn't form part of gift with a reservation of benefits rule. It's not in there. The other point is that the pre-owned asset tax. Now, pre-owned asset tax was introduced in the Finance Act 2004. And what that does is it imposes an income tax charge on assets which you've given away, but you continue to receive a benefit from. Now, again, gift and loan, they're not caught by this because, again, as I've said, the asset hasn't been given away. It's a loan. And also, the settlor is not a beneficiary of that trust. The reason why the settlor can actually get his loan repayments back is because he's a creditor in the loan agreement. He can't actually benefit from that actual trust except via the loan agreements. And if you look on the HMRC manuals, I've given you the Pacific IHTM manuals that you can refer to, and they clearly mention that gift and loan trusts are not caught by either gift with a reservation or the pre-owned asset tax. Right, so the whole rest of the webinar, what I'm going to do is I'm going to sort of take you through a case study of what my couple can and can't do. So I'll introduce you to John and Moira. And John, 63, Moira, 60. They're both still working at the moment. Both of them have got a combined income of 63,000. And you can see what their wealth summary is on the screen. Okay. Now, they're both concerned about inheritance tax. Their combined estate is just shy of 2 million. Currently, they've got two nil rate bands of 650, and provided their property is passed to lineal descendants, they've also got the residence nil rate band of 125,000. Now, with the residence nil rate band, it's increasing each year by 25,000 until it reaches 175,000 in April 2020. And then hopefully both the standard nil rate band and the residence nil rate band will increase by CPI. But you never know. They've already frozen the nil rate band again from when they, because it's been that since 2009. So you just don't know, but hopefully they will increase. But with ours, you can see that if John died first, everything passed to Moira. On the second death, they'd have a current IHT bill of 306,000. What they want to try and do is they want to help their children, they want to help their grandchildren, but they have got concerns. They're still working. They don't know whether they might need some money in retirement. They don't know whether their health might deteriorate. So when they sit down with their advisor, they'll go through what their family arrangement is. They've got two children. Currently, their children, they're both high rate taxpayers. They've got good jobs. They don't really need help at the moment. They don't need an immediate inheritance. They've got two grandchildren. Currently, they're minors. Again, they may want to help them as they grow up. At the moment, they're at school. But we know what the cost of universities are. Maybe they need a deposit for a house, a car, driving lessons, whatever. So they want to help them. But like I said, they've got this concern that their own health might deteriorate. They may need extra money in retirement. They may need to pay for their long-term care. So what is best for them? Now, they've sat down, they discuss all their concerns with their advisor, and with the advisor's help, they say, yes, gift and loan, it's the best solution for us at the moment. So they're going to set up a joint gift and loan trust. They'll set that up with a £10 gift. So each of them is making a £5 gift into that trust. It's covered by the annual exemption. But like I said previously, if it hadn't been, it would either be a chargeable lifetime transfer or a potentially exempt transfer, depending on what trust they use. Then they decided that they're going to loan the trustees 600k. So each of them are loaning 300k. They're going to take that cap. They're going to take the loan from their cash surplus and also some of it from their OEIC portfolio. You've got to remember that if they do take money from their OEIC portfolio, then there could be a charge, a capital gains tax liability on the encashment. But let's say that they've been rebasing that each year. They've used their annual exemption, so it's unlikely that there will be a charge there. Okay, so they've decided to do this. So let's look at a summary of their wealth once the gift and loan has actually been set up. So if we go back to their wealth summary, you could see that they had the surplus cash, they have the OEICs. Now, once it's set up, you can see that their actual wealth hasn't changed, but the structure of their wealth has changed. They've got less cash surplus, but they've got the loan. Now, the loan, remember, it's still an asset in their estate. And that's why, even though they've restructured it, their wealth summary hasn't actually changed. They've still got the same amount of assets. Okay. Now, again, as we were discussing earlier, they want to provide some money for their grandchildren. They want to maybe try and help them. So they think that, yes, okay, we can afford to gift 200,000 for our two grandchildren. Now, currently, they have two children, but they've only got two grandchildren at the moment. Some may come along later. They may not want them to get it when they're 18. So they decide to take out a discretionary gift trust. Now, they've made no other gifting in the last 7 years. Yes, it's a chargeable lifetime transfer, but there'll be no initial 20% entrance charge because it's within the nil rate band. So if again, they've taken that out. So let's have a look at their wealth structure. So with the loan, that's what it is. Now, they were surprised to find out from their advisor that their ISAs on their death are actually included in their estate for inheritance tax. So you can see that they're sitting with quite a substantial pot of ISAs. So what they decide to do is they're going to withdraw 100,000 each from their ISAs, and they're going to use that as the gift into the discretionary trust. Now, similarly, you can see currently their wealth hasn't changed. The structure again has changed. They now have a gift, but remember that gift is still in their estate for 7 years. So when they've taken out the gift and loan and the gift trust, their wealth hasn't changed, it's only the structure for the time being. Right, so that's currently what they've done. So let's move on the clock, 7 years. Okay, so 7 years time, both have retired. They're in receipt of pensions. Their income has gone down slightly. We'll assume that the nil rate bands have increased, the residence nil rate band has increased. So let's have a look at their wealth summary in 7 years' time. Okay, you can see that the loan is still there because, like I said, it's an asset. They haven't taken any repayments from it, so it hasn't gone down. So that's just a 300. But the gift has now gone because they've survived 7 years from that gift. It's totally outside their estate. Beg your pardon. Okay, so 7 years on, that's a wealth structure, but we want to look at what has actually happened to the gift and loan bond. So if we assume that there's a 5% net growth rate, there's been no loan repayments. Now, the outstanding loan of 600,000 is still in their estate. The £10, that was covered by the annual exemption. But 5% growth, you have, the growth is all outside their estate. And that, after 7 years, is 244, just over 244,000. And effectively, that is saving them IHT of just shy of 98,000. Now, all that growth is for the beneficiaries. The trustees can decide to give some of that to the beneficiaries if they want. So now they've got the option of providing some money for the beneficiaries, but also the loan is still for the settlers, so the settlers can still get the loan back as well. So that's the bond, their combined IHT set in 7 years' time. If we, like I said, we assumed that the nil rate band had gone up to 355 and the residence nil rate band was 190, it has to pass to lineal descendants, remember. There is a few other conditions with it, but that is the main one. Now, yes, they still have an IHT bill of just over 200,000, but remember, they would have had an IHT bill of about 400,000, because if all that growth that was is now sitting in the bond had been in their estate, they would also have the IHT of 98,000 to pay. So they've effectively reduced their IHT bill by roughly about 200,000. Right, so if we go back to John and Moira, so we know 7 years' time, they're both retired. They're getting less money. When they were working, they were getting 63,000, but that's now gone down to 39,000. Okay, so do they need some of their loan back? Do they want it? They've got to remember that if they start to take the loan back, they're actually taking what could effectively be future growth from the trust, because there won't be as much left in the trust fund to actually grow. So they've got to think about, how much do I actually need? Do I need a lot? Do I need it all? Can I survive on the 39,000? So if they decided to leave it and just survive on the 39,000, after 15 years, the actual growth would be just shy of 650,000. And that's quite a substantial growth rate. And that could all be held for the beneficiaries. So what they need to do is, they need to go back to their advisor. They need to sit down with an advisor, go through what their options are. So let's just have a look at the options. What if they need the loan repaid? They've decided that 39,000 isn't enough for them to live on. They were used to 63,000, that has actually reduced quite a bit. So they've decided that they want to take some of the loan back. Now, remember, the bond is in year 8 now. So as it's a bond, as you're probably all aware, that each year you can take 5% withdrawals without triggering a chargeable event. So 5% of the 600,000, effectively they could take 30,000 a year and that wouldn't trigger a chargeable event. But you've got to remember that the bond now is in year 8. So they've actually have 8 years of unused 5%. So effectively, they could actually take a partial surrender of 240,000, and that wouldn't trigger a chargeable event. But they decide they don't need 240,000. There'd be no point taking that. It's sitting in their bank account, and it would increase their wealth and increase their inheritance tax. But what they do decide is, they decide that they need 36,000 to supplement their pension. So yes, that will give them 75,000, which is extra than when they were actually working, but they've decided they're quite healthy, they want to go traveling, so they want 36,000. Now, if you look at 36,000, that's 6% of the original investment. So effectively that's over the 5%. But remember that they've got this build-up of the accumulated tax-deferred allowance, so they can actually use that. And effectively, they can actually get the loan repaid in just over 16 years without triggering a chargeable event. So that's if they want, the loan repaid. What about they actually do that? So with this graph, you've got the value of the trust fund. You can see that this is the 5% growth. So for the first 7 years, they didn't take any loan. So you can see that the growth rate is actually more, but once they start taking the loan, the growth rate will slow down. And then in year 24, they've actually only got 24K that they can take in year 24. Okay, because remember, they cannot get back any more than the loan. So once they take that 24,000, then they cannot get any more money from it. And effectively, from year 24 onwards, all that money, all the blue line, is for the beneficiary. And the bond could actually have risen to 991,000, just over 991,000. That's all outside their estate, and that's an IHT saving of just shy of 400,000. So you can see that they've had access to their money, but they have got IHT efficiency as well. So again, if we just look at their wealth summary, so they've taken year 24, they've taken all their loan, so they've effectively, now all that has gone out of their wealth because they've had it back, they've spent it, they've travelled the world. So if you look at their combined IHT now, so if we say that by the year 24, the nil rate bands have gone up to 450, and the residence nil rate band is 200, then they've got no IHT. But they've got a trust with a big pot of money that can be used for their beneficiaries now. Okay, so what, okay, so that's, they wanted the loan. What about they decide 39,000 is fine for them in retirement. They don't need it. They'll waive the loan. So if you waive the loan, that's effectively a gift. If you fully waive the loan, it's a chargeable lifetime transfer because we're dealing with a discretionary trust. It would be a potentially exempt transfer if they had a bare trust. Now, they hadn't made any other gifts previously, and each settler is waiving 300,000. So that is within the available nil rate band for lifetime gifting, so there's no IHT to pay. It's not a gift reservation, because remember, for it to be a gift reservation, you have to gift something and retain a right to benefit from it. Now they're gifting it, they can't get any benefit from that trust. The loan's all been repaid, they're not a creditor of the loan, so there's no gift reservation implications there. But what about part waiving? So part waiving is still a chargeable lifetime transfer because it's a discretionary trust, but you need to consider, is there a gift reservation there? So just let's have a look at that. So what section 20 says is the loan is being part waived. That is a gift. The gift is going into a bond. That bond is holding both its big trust pot, and the trustees need to provide money if the settler wants to repayment of some of their loan. So they're sitting with a bond that's got some gifted element in it and some loan related element in it, but it's one big pot of money. So if they then take a withdrawal from it to pay a loan, where is that coming from? It's coming from that one big pot of money. So if they do part waivers, really the trustees have got to be very vigilant on how they separate that trust out. So if you just look at an example of it, so if you've got bond value just over 980,000, John and Moira, they'd each made a gift of 300,000 each, but they've decided, okay, I'm going to part waiver 175,000 of it. So they're going to part waiver some of their loan. So now the trustees have got a trust fund. Some of it's gifted property, just over 35%, but some of it's loan related, which is just over the 64%. But it's all in one bond. So it's very hard to establish whether the future loan repayments come from just the loan related property or the gifted property. Now, it's just something to be aware of. HMRC, I haven't seen HMRC challenge. I know other companies out there do part waivers, and I haven't seen HMRC challenge any of them. But just with the client in climate at the moment, when HMRC with inheritance tax and the way they're looking at trusts, this is the reason why we don't offer part waivers on ours. You can only fully waiver ours. What we suggest is that, again, if you're dealing with a client that has got a substantial loan that they want to make, you can separate it into different bonds as well. It just means that you will never put your client in a situation where they don't know if they part waiver, whether when they get the loan back, it's coming from a gifted part or the loan related part. Because if HMRC can prove that it's come from the gifted property, then it will be a gift for the reservation and it will taint the whole of the trust, not just the gifted part. So that's the part waiver. So again, we've looked at the structure of it. We've looked at what they can and can't do and how they can get money back. But remember, I said it was a discretionary trust. So the final point is, I just want to go over the periodic charges. So with the periodic charge, as you probably all know, it's a 6% charge and it's on the net value of any relevant property in the trust. And it's on the day before the anniversary. Okay. So that means that because it's the net value of the trust, the outstanding loan you actually deduct off. But, and this is a big but, for reporting requirements. Now, reporting requirements, you only take off reliefs. You don't, it's our understanding that you can't actually take off the outstanding loan. So effectively, it's the full value of the trust that is used when you're determining whether the IHT 100 needs to be sent to HMRC. So if we look, remember, there's two settlers, there's John and Moira. So there's actually two settlements. Okay. So at the 10th anniversary, I'm just going to look at one. It's the 300,000. So at the 10th anniversary, the 300,000 has grown to 488,000. Now that is over the nil rate band of 325. So you could say, oh no, there's going to be a 6% charge there. But remember, you can take off the outstanding loan. Okay, so when you take off the outstanding loan, it brings the net value down to 188,688. Meaning that there's no periodic charge. But remember, they will need to report it because the total value of the trust fund was over the nil rate band. And if there's no periodic charge, going forward, there's no exit charges onto any distributions. Now, a loan repayment is not a distribution. So any loan repayments that have been made to the settlor are not classed as distributions. It's only distributions to the beneficiaries that you have to worry about exit charges. Now, again, if we go back to John and Moyer, remember that they made a 200,000 gift to a discretionary trust for their grandchildren, but we don't know whether they took it out before they took out their gift and loan trust or after. Now, if they decided they'd taken it out before their gift and loan trust, let's have a look at the periodic charge for that. Similarly, the net value, that's at the 188,000. But when you're looking at the available nil rate band on discretionary trusts, you have to look, when did the trust start? You look back 7 years from there to see whether any chargeable lifetime transfers were made. Now, if they'd taken out the discretionary gift trust before they took out the gift and loan trust, then the answer is yes, there is one there. Now, because like I said, it was a joint gift, it's 100,000, that has to be taken off the nil rate band available for this trust, which means it's got less of a nil rate band. Now, it's fine at year 10, but if you look at year 20, then that's when you may get the charge, because you've got to remember that the available nil rate band for the 10th year and all the subsequent 10th years are based on what they actually did when they took that trust out and in the 7 years previously. So that's if they've taken it out before. In fact, really what they should do is you should take out the gift and loan before the gift trust. Or you could take out two loan trusts as well, like we were saying. And that actually helps with the nil rate bands that are available, but also it helps with if they do want to waive some of the loan, they're actually waiving full entitlement to the loan. So if you look at getting the order right, so John and Moira, they're going to take out two gift and loan trusts for 30,000 each. Then they're going to take out the discretionary gift trust. So what's the outcome on each trust's periodic charge in that situation? The discretionary gift and loan, it hasn't got any previous chargeable lifetime transfers in the 7 years before it was taken out. It doesn't affect it. So you can see that it's got more of an available nil rate band. So there's less likely for the periodic charge to arise. But like I said, remember, always remember about the reporting requirements. The reporting requirements are based on the full value of the trust, not the net value, okay? And then with the discretionary gift trust, similarly, so to work out the available nil rate band on the discretionary gift trust, you go back to then, you look back 7 years from that discretionary gift trust. So did they make any previous chargeable lifetime transfers in that 7 years? Well, the answer is no. Even though there's a gift and loan trust sitting there, the loan is not a gift, so they didn't make a gift. The only gift that they made was that £10, and that £10 is normally covered by the annual exemption. Now, if it wasn't, it wouldn't be that much of an issue because it would only have to be £10 that comes off the nil rate band. So similarly, you can see with the discretionary gift trust, there's no periodic charges to pay. And that's why you should, when you're sitting down, and again, that's why clients come to advisors, because the advisors know the correct order of gifting. But you can see by doing it correctly, both trusts have got a full available nil rate band. So just the final, just to recap, just disadvantages of the gift and trust, because like I said, yes, they're not for every client. They're used in estate planning, but they might not be appropriate for all clients. Now, yes, the outstanding loan, it remains in the estate. You could see when we were going through the size with the wealth summary, that outstanding loan was there. and you pay IHT on that when it's in the estate. It's not a gift, it's a loan to the trustees, and that's why it's staying in the estate. As you can see, when John and Moira went into retirement and they started to take their loans, once they hit getting all their loan back, then they had to stop. They couldn't get any more benefits from it. If the trustees had decided to make distributions to a beneficiary, then you've got to remember that those distributions could be part of the tax deferred allowance as well. And once you've taken 100% off that loan amount, and it doesn't matter who's got that, anything else is a chargeable gain on it. In my example, if John and Moira had decided from day one that they wanted to take 6% off their loan, the 36,000, then they would have got a chargeable event certificate each year for 1%. So again, you've got to make your clients aware that there could be income tax charges that apply. If they'd wanted all of their loan back, maybe they needed it to buy a new house, or their health had deteriorated so much that they needed a lot of money, again, that could trigger a chargeable event as well. And if they died earlier on, when it hadn't been in the trust and been allowed to grow, then there probably wouldn't be that much IHT. But there's always advantages. The loan, it's interest free. You trustees don't have to worry about calculating interest and adding that. The settlers can have access to regular loan repayments, and that can supplement their income. It can be accessed at any time on demand. Yes, it could trigger a chargeable event and an income tax liability, but they still have that safety net of being able to get it. Growth is outside the estate from day one, and that's all free of IHT. When you're dealing with the discretionary trust, the trustees have control over who benefits from the trust. So again, you can use it for generational planning. And similarly, when you use a discretionary trust, it doesn't form part of the beneficiary's estate. So again, if you've got grandchildren, children that maybe are not in relationships or they're in dodgy businesses, bankruptcy, divorce, it's not included because they're not entitled to it until the trustees make an appointment to them. And they do have the ability to waive the loan. And with that, I will hand you back to Mark and say thank you for listening.
Fantastic. Thanks, Kim. Hopefully everyone found that really useful. There's a lot of good information there. But a couple of questions raised on the chat box. First one of these I can probably pick up myself, actually, which is the gift and loan trust available via onshore and offshore bonds? Simple answer is yes. It's available through all of our bonds. So irrespective of whether you prefer an onshore or an offshore strategy, the gift and loan trust is absolutely available to you. There is a second one here about order of gifting. Quite an interesting one. Kim obviously has touched on that. The other thing I would point you to is our webinar that we did last week.
Yes, true.
We have an archived version of that is on the website that looks in detail order of gifting. But as Kim rightly said, it's very important to get the order of these gifts correct in order to minimise any tax liabilities that might incur. So absolutely encourage you to go back and have a look at that webinar if you have any questions. However, I think we'll probably leave it there now, as I'm just quite conscious we're short on time. So before we go, I think I'd just very quickly summarise some of the support that we're able to provide you across all of our business lines. So whether this be brochures and newsletters, webinars such as this one, as well as some of the other elements you see on the screen there, like our technical wire and briefing notes, budget summaries and tech casts. In addition, it's worth noting that we're one of the only UK providers who are still able to offer you dedicated office-based and field-based account managers who can help you write in any aspects of business with Canada Life. So do make sure you utilise them. And finally, don't forget our award-winning ICAN technical team, who obviously Kim is a member of. They're all experts across their relevant business lines, available to you via telephone and email. So again, encourage you to utilise them as much as you can. Finally, you may have seen that Canada Life are on the road throughout this and next month with a series of roadshow events around the UK. We're looking at the future of investing and looking at some investment strategies that go alongside that. The headline speaker for these events is Tony Wickenden, who many of you will know from Technical Connection fame. So if you are interested in coming along, as I say, there's a variety of venues around the country. The link is on the screen there to our registration, or you can simply access it via our website at canadalife.co.uk. So I think that's it for us for this morning. So hopefully you found that useful. We really do value your feedback on these webinars. So you will notice there's a short survey as you exit this, and we really would encourage you to leave any relevant comments for us there. We'll switch the audio off now, but again, as usual, we'll leave that chat box open for a few more minutes. If there are any other questions that you haven't raised so far, please do continue to raise those and we'll come back to you outside of the webinar. And finally, thank you again for your time this morning. Hope you join us next time.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.